Tight end Andrew Corliss deals with loss, while linebacker Clay Matthews deals with injury. Those are a few of the biggest stories emerging from Packers training camp, and we'll be discussing those. But first, we feature an interview with Sigmund Bloom of footballguys.com. It's all coming up on Railbird Central next. Green Bay Packers fans, welcome to Railbird Central at 24/7 Sports and Cheesehead TV. I'm your host, Brian Caravu. We're talking some Packers football this morning. We're talking Packers training camp, but to kick off the show, we're talking fantasy football. To do so, we're bringing a guest on the show.
Expert interview.
We have Sigmund Bloom of footballguys.com and the Audible podcast. Mr. Bloom, how you doing this morning?
Brian, it's good to be back. I think, what was the first time I was on the show? Like 2009, I think?
We had you on the show years ago, and it's been too long.
It's been a fruitful relationship since then, and we're both from the old internet. You know, we're from the early days of the football internet before social media. It's wonderful to be back. Did you hear the Mike's last night? Mike's song? Go check that out. It's fun, and it's funny as a fantasy football expert. I'm making air quotes when I say that. The Packers. I was just saying this yesterday on Twitter. One of the most boring teams, and this is a good thing, Packers fans, one of the most boring teams to evaluate, because you look at them and they're so stable in an era when the NFL instability is basically the order of the day. It makes it less fun to try to go out on a limb and predict things, but they're rock solid yet again.
I was wondering, have we done a good job graduating from internet 1.0 to 2.0 or whatever we're at now?
We're still here. That's evidence that we did, I think.
Okay.
I hope.
But the simple fact that we're interacting on a podcast may be that evidence. So anyway, let's talk some fantasy here. Eddie Lacy, is he right. The very top overall fantasy football player this year in the NFL?
I think no. I think he's a solid back half of the first round pick.
Okay.
And here's why. And you can tell me whether my assumptions are correct or not. And there's a move to want to push Eddie Lacy up a little bit, maybe in the top two or three running backs, because he's young, because he's still on the upside of his career.
Yep.
Because obviously Green Bay, it's one of the Cadillac offenses of the NFL. And when we're looking at fantasy players, we want players in those very productive, very consistent offenses. Here's my problem with Lacy. We can go back to how the Packers even ended up with Lacy. You know, get into how Monty Ball went ahead of Eddie Lacy. And I'm sure that your listeners knew Monty Ball well and maybe wondered about that and are relieved that it went down that way now in hindsight. But it was Eddie Lacy falling about a round later than folks expected because of long-term durability concerns. And while those concerns haven't really manifested themselves, he's only missed a little bit of time here and there. You can tell that the Packers, and this is a team that always plans on playing well into January, they put him on a bit of a pitch count. It doesn't seem like they're ever going to push him to the 320, 350 carry level. I think James Starks is playing the best football of his career at this point. And he's excellent in all facets of the game. So there's no reason to push Eddie Lacy to his limits the way that Minnesota will probably push Adrian Peterson to his limits, or Pittsburgh will push Le'Veon Bell, another running back from that draft, to his limits. So while I like Eddie Lacy as a player, and I think that he's shown that he's getting better every year, and he is one of the best running backs in the NFL, I do not see the Packers giving him that, you know, give you the ball until you puke workload that can put a fantasy football running back over the top.
Yeah, I totally agree there. And part of the reason they put him on that pitch count is because he deals with asthma, which apparently
right.
kind of manifests itself worse during the colder winter months. And he does have to come out of the game occasionally. So, yeah, you make some very valid points
there.
We're
nitpicky.
Yeah, yeah.
But in the first round, the first round of fantasy drafts is all about being nitpicky.
Yeah.
How do you decide between Dez Bryant and Demaryius Thomas and Julio Jones? You have to get nitpicky.
Yeah. All right. Then we've got Aaron Rodgers, who's considered by many to be the top overall player in the entire NFL, but not necessarily the number one fantasy football player. Where should Aaron Rodgers realistically be taking?
I mean, he's easily one of the top two fantasy quarterbacks. And if we got fantasy points for efficiency, he would be number one. But we don't. So I think that
somebody out there probably has that kind of system.
Yeah, but there's your innovation. If you want to innovate in the ever-expanding world of fantasy football, try to a league that revolves around not total points, but efficiency per touch.
Yeah.
And then Aaron Rodgers is ridiculous. I have Andrew Luck. I see Luck and Rodgers going around the same point in drafts.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that in that proposition, I want Andrew Luck. And or if it's three or four picks earlier, I want Andrew Luck. Because Andrew Luck's offense, he added Andre Johnson. He added Philip Dorsett. They have a terrible defense. Indianapolis is going to put up a ton of points. And if you're looking for some room for upside from Rodgers, because the thing is, the problem with Rodgers is you would be shocked when you see his final numbers when you look at his attempts. They're not a pass-heavy team, the Packers. They're not a team that's going to throw the ball 600 or 650 times. And if there's room for Rodgers to grow as a fantasy quarterback, it might be because some of those games in Lambeau last year, Brian, they were over at halftime.
Yeah.
And he only played for about a half. You know, he put up a good fantasy game in a half, and teams couldn't hang with them. So if teams are a little more competitive with the Packers this year in some of those home games where they're not up 21 or 28 by the middle of the third quarter, then there's more time there. And that could help Lacy a little bit too. That's about the only theory I can come up with to project some sort of increase in these numbers. I think there was about three or four games last year that went that way. But otherwise, it's status quo. So I like Rodgers a lot. I think he's going to be a rudder for your fantasy team. But I would take Andrew Luck if they're going around the same point in the draft.
Fair enough. Let's talk about Aaron Rodgers' targets here a little bit. Jordy Nelson, he's kind of been an underrated player for most of his career. But it seems like people are finally catching up to how good he actually is. I've heard this people say this. Can he possibly be worth a first-round fantasy draft choice?
He can, but again, the wide receiver is so stacked as the NFL becomes more and more of a passing league. To take Jordy Nelson in the first round, you're probably taking him over one of Antonio Brown, Julio Jones, Dez Bryant, Demaryius Thomas, Calvin Johnson, Odell Beckham. And the thing is, Jordy Nelson has actually put up numbers on the level of those guys. Like you said, he's underrated, but he's coming in with a hip surgery, which I don't expect to be a major issue, but still he's recovering from an off-season surgery. Somewhat major surgery, not just a little minor tune-up. And we'll see if Davante Adams comes on just a little bit, because he was very inconsistent last year.
Mm-hmm.
If he comes on just a little bit, does that take the edge off of Jordy Nelson and Randall Cobb's upside? But if you look at Jordy Nelson, I think that the numbers have been trying to show us this all along. I think it goes back to like 2011, the season that they gave him that ridiculous extension, one of the worst extensions. Sorry, Jordy, but that was like a four-year, $14 million extension or something like that. It was ridiculous. He signed an extension midseason during his breakout season and probably could have gotten two or three times the money if he had just waited until the end of the season. But anytime Jordy Nelson has been on the field with Aaron Rodgers, he's a wide receiver one for fantasy football. The only thing that has held back his numbers was when he was banged up a little bit and when Rodgers missed time. Otherwise, he's money in the bank.
Mm-hmm. All right. The guy opposite him, Randall Cobb, where does he rank among the top tier of fantasy wide receivers? You know, there's only one football to go around in Green Bay, and maybe that hurts them.
It does. Cobb is going around the 2-3 turn in drafts. He's a low wide receiver one or a high wide receiver two. And again, very reliable. I'm starting a campaign that when we talk about fantasy football receivers or tight ends, we talk about them in terms of the connection. So, taking Randall Cobb over Alshon Jeffrey might be a tougher call, but taking Rodgers to Cobb over Cutler to Jeffrey, now that sounds like a proposition. You know, Mallett to Hopkins, you know, that these sound like better propositions when you add the quarterback in. The one potential pitfall for Cobb is that he's not a big receiver. He doesn't fit in our typical red zone specialist receiver mold, and yet he was last year. He was terrific at getting free in the red zone, scoring those touchdowns. Again, you know, if Devontae Adams starts to master the fade, if a tight end increases in ability and gets a little bit more, then you're – touchdowns can be a little bit volatile year to year, much more so than receptions and yards. So perhaps Cobb takes a small step back. But all of these Green Bay Packers players are so safe, and they still have a lot of upside because from a week-to-week basis, because this offense is so efficient. So I'm all for Randall Cobb. It's terrific if you can get him as your wide receiver, too. And he's an acceptable wide receiver, one, if you go, say, running back to start your draft, or take Rob Gronkowski in the first round or something like that.
We're talking to Sigmund Bloom of footballguys.com here at Railbird Central on a Wednesday morning. Sig, what's the feeling from fantasy football owners with tight end Richard Rodgers, who seems to be an emerging player in the Packers offense?
A shoulder shrug? I don't know. You know, we love Ted Thompson. Okay, seriously, Ted Thompson, back when I used to hit the circuit on the All-Star games, going to like the third tier All-Star game, only Ted, of all the GMs, Ted Thompson was the only one you would see there. And how the Packers have done so well with some of the more obscure names they've gotten and some picks that maybe have seemed a bit surprising, you know, I chalk a lot of that up to Ted Thompson and the work that he does, really hands-on work. But every now and then he'll make a pick that'll leave us scratching our heads. You know, I would say that Richard Rodgers is one of those. Richard Rodgers is he's a fine receiving tight end. He's adequate or maybe slightly above average, but he doesn't really offer a lot of upside. When you look at the kind, you know, Jimmy Graham went in the third round. You know, players that have a lot more room to grow and maybe a lot lower floor as a prospect. So Richard Rodgers can be, you know, a fine cog in the machine and do his job. But as far as fantasy potential, when you're behind Nelson and Cobb and Devontae Adams, I think in the pecking order, and you have a strong running game with two good running backs, I just don't see how there's going to be enough to go around for Rodgers. And, you know, we'll see. And by the way, definitely, you know, thoughts out to Andrew Corliss and he and his family and everything they're going through right now. And he had some other things, self-inflicted things to deal with, too, in the offseason. So, you know, that might be the theory that Rodgers' role grows, is Corliss between the missed time, both for, you know, tragic things and things that are more of a personal failing. That Rodgers' role grows, but how, you know, where's the room in this offense for a tight end to have big numbers? It would have to be a player with a talent to demand those targets over other talented players, and I just don't see Rodgers doing that.
Yeah, I do think Richard Rodgers is kind of an emerging player, like I said, but once again, there's only one football to go around, and he could be really good and still, you know, kind of be limited from that perspective. All right, Packers defense. Are they the type of defense that you draft and rely on as your every week, you know, week in, week out defense in fantasy football?
Probably not, but you know, there's very few defenses that rise to that level.
Yeah,
you know, the Texans, Buffalo, you know, the Cardinals, maybe the Dolphins to start the season. However, the Green Bay could be extremely...
I noticed you left the Seahawks out, though.
We'll see now. The Seahawks, I mean, yeah, I forget about the Seahawks. The Seahawks are going to... You know why I forget about the Seahawks, Brian? Because they're always drafted higher than I will draft them.
Okay.
You know, because I see a lot of potential on the same... The Seahawks actually took a step back as a fantasy defense last year, even whenever they came on in the second half of the year. Again, it's funny. We're going to start from this spot, Brian, as some sort of revolution in fantasy football. Because, again, on an efficiency basis... Seattle's numbers were right where you expected them to be as far as giving up very few points, very few yards, and so on. But they didn't make as many splash plays as they had in the past. So their fantasy defense took a step back.
Gotcha.
what you like about the Packers are a lot of people do defense streaming now, which means really you're picking your defense from the pool of 15 or 18 defenses. Mm-hmm. If everybody in your league carries two defenses, you can't do this, but that's really rare.
Yeah.
So you're looking at the schedule and you're picking your defense every week. And as I talked about earlier, last year, if you didn't even matter who the opponent was, if you just played the Packers defense when they were at Lambeau, I mean, there were some games that were just total drubbings where the defense, you know, get like, you know, the kind of games where they show the sideline and the guys are like slapping each other on the back and smiling and laughing during an NFL game. That's how the Packers roll. And if you were to draft the Packers as your fantasy defense this year, I would endorse that, because you look at the schedule this year, and yes, they start out on the road, but they start out on the road against Jay Cutler. And wow, you know, that's kind of like one of those bazooka, one of those Cracker Jack prizes where you don't know what you're going to get, but it could be really good for the Green Bay defense if Cutler missteps in that first week. Then they go home to face Seattle, Kansas City, and they go on the road to face San Francisco, which this is in the San Francisco team that got into epic battles with mm-hmm. Green Bay in recent years. Then they go back home to play St. Louis and San Diego. So at Chicago and at San Francisco, or even as road games, games that I think the Packers can control. And then, like I said, I am for any time the Packers are at home, even against a team like Seattle, I will start the Packers defense, because mm-hmm. we know that there's magic there. And in this team, everything can click. Everything can get rolling. And then they go into their week 7 bye. So if you draft the Packers defense, start them week 1. If it continues to go well, it's like, you know, double or nothing bets. Just keep them in your lineup until they let you down. Because they do have, it's so funny, I have to, you know, just out of the interest of confessional, that first spot I remember doing on your show, I think I panned Clay Matthews. I'm surprised you invited me back ever. Because who, you know.
You have a good memory. Like, I don't even remember that.
I have especially good memory for my missteps. But, you know, it's just funny, because who would think now downstream, here we are 6 years later, that he's an inside, outside linebacker, a real leader of this defense. You know, they added Julius Peppers, who showed that he has a lot left in this tank. They seem to grow cornerbacks on trees. Again, finding some of these guys like Sam Shields and Corey Hayward that have really, really worked out for this team. The safeties they've gotten have worked out. You know, they keep replenishing the talent on this defense. And when you have Aaron Rodgers, it puts the defense in that playing from ahead scenario where they get to be more aggressive. So the Packers defense, you know, again, it's. I feel kind of sad, because this is a boring, straightforward team in an era of the NFL when we're constantly adjusting to change.
All right, time for some personal talk here. And I'm just kind of curious that the emergence of, you know, daily fantasy sports. Yeah. You're the co-owner of footballguys.com. That's been around for, you know, a long, long time. What changes right. have you seen in terms of traffic and interest since daily fantasy has emerged, really, in the past just few years?
Right.
1 year.
Really? Yeah. I mean, last year was the year, I think, where the profile really was put at the forefront, where you can't watch sports without seeing the advertisement, the Mike flag. And the thing is, and this is how you know it's here to stay, because the companies in daily fantasy are in joint ventures, are in deals with the leagues, with the teams. Okay, this is, if you can't beat them, join them kind of situation that we're watching unfold here. Because professional sports, you know, if New Jersey or a state tries to legalize sports gambling, they jump right in and shut that down. I mean, Adam Silver, NBA, maybe has a little more liberal attitude about it. But daily fantasy is here to stay. And how it's changed from our perspective is just resources both coming in and going out. I mean, as part of the fantasy industry, I mean, it was fun when it was our clubhouse and just kind of Dungeons and Dragons for sports nerds and people who had the sickness. Now, with this raging torrent of money coming in from daily fantasy, it's resetting the priorities. It's resetting the priorities on the worldwide leader. And, you know, it's resetting the priorities for everybody in the sports space. So, you know, it's a revenue source. And it's also, as far as resources going out, we've hired, I don't even know how many daily fantasy writers. I mean, when I did the latest hiring round in February for us, it was at the top of the list. I think we hired five new daily fantasy writers. And just for anybody out there listening, if you were trying to break into the fantasy industry as a writer, as an analyst, daily fantasy is where it's at. College football daily fantasy, or whatever obscure sport. Seriously, you know, I see people, Brian, I see people on Twitter that never talked about NHL or PGA or NASCAR, talking about what their picks are going to be for daily fantasy in the British Open. You know, they've never. I've followed people for years, never mentioned golf, and they're making daily fantasy picks. So it's a major growth industry right now. And for fantasy, for what we do, it's really the same thing. I mean, at the kernel of every fantasy analysis we do is just football analysis. And we've always been breaking these guys down on a weekly basis. We've always been publishing weekly rankings and taking it to the micro level. You know, this week, which quarterback do you want? This week, which running back do you want? Now you add this other dimension of putting a price tag on them, which is kind of what we do in fantasy drafts anyway with an ADP. You know, it isn't just Aaron Rodgers versus Russell Wilson. It's Aaron Rodgers for a second round pick versus Russell Wilson for a fourth round pick. You get a similar kind of choice in daily fantasy where it's Aaron Rodgers for 8,000 or Russell Wilson for 6,400. Mm-hmm. And then you get the extra money to a lot of other positions. So it's the same puzzles. It's the same kind of puzzles. I think it's also connected well with the younger crowd, a little bit more instant gratification, mm-hmm. You know, pick it up, drop it and leave it, and pick it back up again and drop it and leave it, where old school fantasy football is the grind. But that's why it matters so much when you win the title, right? It's why it's so rewarding, because it's just like the NFL season. It's a grind. You go through nicks and bumps and adversity, and you find a way to duct tape it up and keep the team together. You make the playoffs, you pull out a last second win. You know, it's a little bit more like that drama. But it has absolutely changed the landscape of how we do our business and also our content. But still, at the core of all of it is a love of football and really getting caught up and staring at that gem, at that prism of the immense complexity and compelling human stories that unfold every week. It's the best show on TV.
One music question before we let you go.
Please.
I save this to the end because we're going to lose half the audience who's here to talk football. But I am interested. You had mentioned this to me, and you're not the only person I've heard this from. So Sig and I have this connection because of the jam band scene and Fish, and we're both fans. And now you went to the shows in Texas that just happened, what, last weekend?
Yes. It was last Tuesday and Wednesday.
I've heard from multiple people now that Fish is the best they've seen him in years. And, you know, is the reason for that coming on the heels of Trey Anastasio with playing for the Grateful Dead, has that had such an influence on him and the scene and music in general that has just been a huge, huge thing? Has that had an influence?
It had to. And this is my second chance to say, I said this on my show when I was talking about those shows coming up. And there's a lot of great Fish podcasts out there, so I'm available. I would talk to hear the sound of my own voice, and especially about things that I love, like football and like Fish. So I'll try not to go on too long, but I have a lot of thoughts here. I have a lot of feelings about this.
Okay.
Here's for the 3% of you out there, I'm not trying to be conservative, that care about this. But if you love Fish, what I am seeing is Trey's confidence is back. Going back to before the hiatus, going back to the 90s, his phrasing and his nimble agility on the fretboard is back. The band is – they're confident. They're relaxed. They're patient. They're deliberate. They're very mature now in their approach to their own music. And where that's really coming out the most is in the very quiet parts of jams, in the very intricate parts of the compositions, in parts where Trey – is not the foreground. He's at the same depth as the rest of the band, and they're kind of four moving parts of one machine or all sharing one brain. And why that's important is Fish is all about tension release, you know, build and the release. And that means so much more when the quiet parts are really quiet, when everybody, you know, when you're going to Alpine Valley this weekend, how many people does that place fit? Like 25 or 30,000 people?
Oh yeah, 30,000.
You know, you know, when everybody is quiet, 30,000 people are quiet, and then 2 or 3 minutes later, you're building and you bring that energy up. It's exhilarating. It's and it reminds me of the summer. I don't know if you got to see any shows in summer 2009, the tour that followed the comeback at Hampton. And what happened on that tour was, because we had all contemplated a future without Fish, and here we were at a Fish show again, we just relished and appreciated the opportunity just to get to hear any of the songs. I think the band did too, especially mm-hmm. Trey, because of his journey during that time when the band was disbanded, when there was no Fish. And this is what all comes back to, really, the love of the jam band scene, or the love of Fish, is it's about appreciating just being. You know, just being alive, being here and now. I always say it's the kind of stuff that makes you want to call your mom and say, thanks for having me, Mom. And I think the band and the crowd is really squarely in that place. Again, the jams are very uplifting, a lot of blissful jams, not as many dance parties or dark trips into the forest to find out what you've encountered. Not that they can't still go there, mm-hmm. but it's a really beautiful, the energy right now at Fish shows is really a beautiful thing. So those of you in the Alpine Valley area, if you're at all interested, this is an amazing, and because they're relaxed, they're playful. They're doing the kinds of silly things, you know, they did last night. It was what, like lyrics from Cross-Eyed and Painless in the middle of Weekapaw Groove, and they did something where they did Reba whistling. I've lost everybody. They're all, it's just me and you now, Brian.
the audience is gone.
Right. It's beautiful. And I appreciate you giving me the chance to talk about it. It's a beautiful thing. And I know that you will be feeling it. You'll be surfing on that wave very soon.
I'm excited to do that as they play at Alpine Valley this weekend. And I truthfully, someday I need to find an outlet to do this. I got to find a podcast network. I think I want to do a podcast on
the intersection of
jam bands and sports, and have it be interview based. People interview who, you know, are passionate about
Bill Walton and Russell Wilson, and because, you know, Fish is now part of Russell Wilson's lore and stuff like that. Absolutely. Yeah. And if I'm not part of the show in some way, I'll be really hurt. But I'm ready to do this. I'm going to help you curate the guests, and I love it. I mean, live music.
It's a niche audience, but there is a segment out there.
That's the future, right? But the mainstream is niche audience.
Exactly.
I mean, that is where we're at in the 21st century, and it is a beautiful thing. Mwah.
Sig, thank you so much for joining me this morning. I've kept you longer than I told you I would, so thanks a lot, and have a good one.
My great pleasure, Brian.
All right, take care. Sigmund Bloom of footballguys.com joining us here at Railbird Central on a Wednesday morning. Apologize for those of you who are not interested in music talk for the past 3-4 minutes or so. We're coming back to Packers football with our next segment.
Packers news of the day.
Packers tight end Andrew Corliss loses a daughter in the midst of training camp. Kind of the opening of training camp, I guess. News came out on Monday about this as Corliss meets the media for the first time since his arrest, and you kind of expect to get some answers from him on that. But then you find this out, and suddenly the arrest and even football lose some significance. So our condolences go to Packers tight end Andrew Corliss and his family. This can't be easy, and it's good to hear all the heartwarming stuff, how the team has embraced him, and even in spite of his off the field issues and things like that. It goes without saying it's been an eventful month for Corliss, not necessarily positive events, but eventful nonetheless. So Andrew Corliss didn't address much about his arrest, but, you know, if you're concerned about that, he's don't worry. He's going to have to address that very soon. He's scheduled for a court date in just 5 days back in Miami, August 10th. Is his court date. Now, I personally don't know whether it's one of those cases where he doesn't have to be present and, you know, just a lawyer has to show up. I don't know. But the ball starts rolling on August 10th for Andrew Corliss. But anyway, injury front at Packers training camp. Clay Matthews and Eddie Lacy both suffer injuries early in camp, both dealing with soreness. Matthews in his knee, Lacy in his foot. If you had to ask, you know, what injury are you more concerned with? I would say Clay Matthews than Eddie Lacy, but really all things told, I'm not concerned yet about either too much. I guess because with Clay Matthews, he's now missed the past two full practices with knee soreness. And if there is a silver lining here, I guess that it's not having to do with his hamstring, which that is what's plagued him for seemingly years. Clay Matthews has dealt on and off for pretty much the first four or five seasons of his career with a hamstring issue that seems to, you know, crop up occasionally and, you know, will keep him out for a week or something like that. Good news is it's not that. You're hoping that this knee issue is nothing big, and you know it's early in training camp, and the Packers aren't about to take, you know, risks, and especially with, you know, pretty much the best player on the defensive side of the football. So no, I'm not injured. Now if this were to linger for weeks on end, then I'll be concerned. But here as we sit here, you know, August, what is it now? August 5th. No, I'm not concerned about Clay Matthews, really. And Eddie Lacy, even less so, because, you know, he dropped out of practice on Tuesday. And it was characterized by Mike McCarthy after as foot soreness. And you know, that I suppose when you're talking about soreness, that's better than any specific injury that could have been brought up, like a sprained ankle or a torn ligament or a broken bone. We're just dealing with soreness here. And you know, I don't know whether it was just simply a case on Tuesday of the Packers, you know, being cautious and you know, stopping a problem before it becomes a problem, I guess, or whether, you know, Eddie Lacy really, really had to sit out. It could just be a case where they were like, okay, let's just sit you for the rest of practice and we'll come back to you. And now the good news for both players and every player dealing with injury on the Packers roster, scheduled day off today, on Wednesday, that gives them all an extra day of rest and recovery here before getting back to the grind then on Thursday. And if, you know, just one more injury issue here that is slightly a concern. The Packers have now, they've dealt with three concussions since camp is opened when it was learned yesterday that offensive lineman Vince Kowalski dropped out due to a concussion. And yeah, we're talking about, you know, Vince Kowalski when there's 90 Packers on the roster right now. We're talking about the 88th, 89th, you know, player. But still, the fact that, you know, three concussions since camp opened, and the first two actually looks like it happened before contact even started. If I'm correct, right? At least Jared Aberderis's concussion that he had, followed by fellow wide receiver Adrian Coxon, and now Kowalski, a little bit concerning that these kind are cropping up here, and you just the prevalence of you know, concussions in today's NFL and learning the effects of them and CTE, and it's too bad that the Packers are having to deal with this. You know, I suppose from the football standpoint, you could, you know, cross your fingers and say, well, I'm glad it didn't happen to any of the, you know, the really good players on the team, but, disappointing nonetheless. So, okay, we talked enough about injuries. What's happening on the field? I personally was at Packers training camp on Tuesday for the first time since camp opened. Was really excited to go see all the players with my own two eyes in pads for the first time and you know, kind of form my own opinions. And the biggest takeaway from Tuesday's practice, the number one thing that stood out to me after watching practice for 2.5 hours, Ty Montgomery, Packers rookie Ty Montgomery. The talent is undeniable. I'm sure you've heard kind of, you know, momentum building with him. People have expressed the same sentiments but you know, getting to see it with my own two eyes, it's no fluff, it's no overreaction, exaggeration. Ty Montgomery is the real deal. And it's interesting because I personally was not that big on Ty Montgomery coming into the NFL draft. You know, I'm a big college football fan. Watch a lot of college football. You know, I watched Stanford, and I definitely knew who Ty Montgomery was. In fact, he had a pretty good junior season in college football, and then kind of, you know, took a step back during his senior year, at least statistically. And I wonder if how much of it is, you know, Stanford really didn't have a prolific passing game last year. And, you know, the simple fact that there was no other real receiving talent around him, meaning fellow wide receivers, tight ends. They used to have such really good tight ends at Stanford, and they lost, you know, those two, three players to the NFL. And I wonder if it's simply a product of, you know, other defenses in the NFL got to be like, okay, let's stop Ty Montgomery, and we stop their offense at Stanford. And I think that was probably, you know, kind of part of it last year, and maybe why, you know, he really didn't put up such, you know, good I always knew he was a good, you know, kick returner, arguably the best in this year's draft class. I had no... That wasn't part of my evaluation. I knew he would be good at that. But as a wide receiver, I was just skeptical. But now that I've seen him with my own two eyes, this guy is going to be good. And he's going to be used his rookie year on offense. You know, I'm sure it'll be one of those situations where it kind of comes along a little bit slowly. Packers probably not going to use him a ton. You know, week one against the Chicago Bears, you know, they'll probably find a few ways to use them, but it's just going to grow as the season goes on. And you know, the Packers just at Tuesday's practice alone, they used Ty Montgomery on a reverse and end around. They got him the ball on a smoke screen. He got a touchdown pass from Scott Tolzien, kind of a fade in the corner of the end zone. The amount of ways they got him the football was remarkable, and a lot of the ways they got him was he was playing with Scott Tolzien a lot on the second unit. And again, I mean, they're making him earn it. They're making him, you know, keep grinding and make him prove himself. Understandably, you know, so early in camp, you don't want give him something, you know, not earned right away. But I'll tell you what, it's not going to be long until Ty Montgomery is out there with the first ring, the first unit. And the Packers have so much, you know, receiving quality, as we talked about with Sigmund Bloom, between Jordy Nelson, Randall Cobb, and Devontae Adams. You know, that's already three good players. But, I mean, they're going to have to come up with four wide receiver sets to utilize Ty Montgomery. And maybe part of it'll be they'll find out ways to, you know, use him in the backfield, kind of like they have with Randall Cobb. And I'll tell you what, I mean, Ty Montgomery is built more like a running back than Randall Cobb. I mean, Randall Cobb is kind of small, you know, and shifty. He's like the jitterbug type. Ty Montgomery is built thicker, stronger, still fast, but yeah, just bigger and bulkier than Randall Cobb. And I could very much see them utilizing him like that. Ty Montgomery, folks, real deal. Really, really impressive when you see him in action. Just how fast, how quick he is, how good he accelerates. The acceleration is remarkable. I'm really kind of surprised. The Packers using him, it appears, as their first-string kick returner. The one thing I don't get is that they're rarely back there on punt returns. And you know, kind of the one criticism of you know, Ty Montgomery in college, had a hard time catching the football, tracking the football. And I'll tell you, if you've never done it before, catching a punt is a ton harder than catching a kickoff. You wouldn't think so. But if you've done both, if you've played football and you've done both, it's far easier to catch a kickoff than it is a punt. And there's many reasons for that. The trajectory, for one. The fact that a punt spirals as opposed to an end-over-end kickoff. The fact that you can the angle of the catch when it comes down, it just makes it harder. There's a lot of reasons for it. But anyway, and I can understand how maybe Ty Montgomery struggles more with catching punts than kickoffs. But still, it just, you know, I understand that they've got Micah Hyde and he's fine. But, they put three guys back there. They put Micah Hyde and Randall Cobb and Jordy Nelson is back there practicing catching punts at practice. I mean, my goodness, what do they need Jordy Nelson, you know, back there? It's not that they're even planning on using him. It's just, you know, they're keeping him sharp just in case, you know, okay, we suffer some injuries, we've got a backup. That's why he's back there. But why isn't Ty Montgomery like the third backup? Why are they having Jordy Nelson back there? Just beyond me. I don't know why they're not even practicing with him at that. So there's the end of my rant. Anyways, that was the biggest thing. Ty Montgomery stood out to me. Other things yesterday at Tuesday's practice, just if you weren't there, Richard Rodgers made a diving one-handed catch, was the play of the day, just because of how remarkable it was and how good the catch was. It really was. It goes to show how much Richard Rodgers is improving. I really do think he's going to be the unquestioned starter in Green Bay this year. And he's going to, you know, he's not that basketball type of tight end that seems to be, you know, so prevalent in the NFL. He really is a throwback. And it really, the comparisons to the tight ends the Packers had in the Super Bowl 31 era, Mark Chmura, Keith Jackson, he is that type of tight end. Not a seam stretcher, not the guy who's going to stretch the field, but Richard Rodgers, just the hands are amazing. Hopefully the blocking is coming. You know, that was kind of his weakness last year. But Richard Rodgers, remarkable set of hands. And he seems to find ways to get open, just smart and savvy in that way. You know, he's not going to get a ton of separation from speed. He's not a speed guy. But man, he's a throwback tight end that can catch the ball and is going to put his shoulder down and try to get as much after the catch as possible. On the other side of the football, Andy Malumba really is a breath of fresh air. You come into the season, you're worried about he's coming off the ACL injury, and you think, well, you know, it takes guys so long to come back from those. You know, they can come back in a year, but they're not the same guy. Well, Andy Malumba is the same. He might even be better. I'm just in awe of how quickly he has come back from a torn ACL, because you see him, he's putting pressure on the quarterback. Then I saw him go out and, you know, cover a running back on just a check down pass, and he's met the running back out in the flat and just met him face to face. So you're seeing the forward movement from Andy Malumba, the lateral agility. He can move backwards. You're seeing that full range of motion that just as you know, put any concerns, any worries about that ACL, just eliminated him. And he really is, you know, there's kind of an opportunity for Andy Malumba to receive some playing time now that Mike Neal has been out with injury in the Packer. And yesterday, so was what's his name from Alabama, Adrian Hubbard. He was out for the first time out yesterday. So the Packers were in need of a little bit more depth at the outside linebacker position. Andy Malumba can provide that, along with Julius Peppers and Nick Perry. And Clay Matthews out too. So I mean, there was three guys missing: Mike Neal, Clay Matthews, and Mike Neal. And you didn't notice it because, you know, Andy Malumba's holding down the fort along with Peppers and Perry and Jayrone Elliott. The Packers, Andy Malumba looks like he can play this year. He really does. So those were some of the big impressions. And then I'll tell you this one. I've noticed the other media hasn't really remarked on this, and they should be. Yesterday during practice, there was a play. One deep down the field. This is team portion, 11 on 11. They're running a play, and Randall Cobb is streaking down deep down the middle of the field. And safety Morgan Burnett picks him up in zone coverage. And Rodgers heaves the ball. And it was so weird. Morgan Burnett decides to, right as the ball is arriving, take out Randall Cobb's legs, diving at the knees. And I was just flabbergasted. I am like, what are you doing in training camp practice, diving at your own teammates' knees? It was so weird. They are lucky, very, very lucky Randall Cobb didn't get injured. Both players kind of just took a split second hesitation to get up, and you kind of hold your breath for half a second. They were both fine, but I'll tell you that was one of the stupidest things I've ever seen. Morgan Burnett yesterday diving at Randall Cobb's knees. And what flabbergasted me even more, Morgan Burnett could have gone after the ball and simply chose not to. It seemed to me like he had a chance to go after the ball and instead chose to dive at a player's knees. I don't know what. Maybe he would have been a split second late, and then the pass ends up being complete if he goes for the ball. Regardless, it was stupid. It was stupid. It was really, really a dumb choice by Morgan Burnett. He deserves criticism for that, and that's why this is his criticism right here on this show. I'm nothing against Morgan Burnett. I mean, I like the guy. I like the way he plays last year. He had a come bounce back season after a bad 2013. But come on, Morgan. You were a guy voted upon by a captain in the playoffs by your teammates. Make smarter choices. Anyway, wrapping the show up.
The day ahead.
In the world of the Green Bay Packers, today, Wednesday, is a day off in Green Bay, a scheduled day off, but the Packers return for 2 days of practice on Thursday and Friday as kind of preparations begin for Saturday's family night scrimmage, or not a scrimmage, practice inside Lambeau Field, a sold-out stadium, kind of one of the biggest events in all of Packers training camp that everybody looks forward to. Because even if you can't go, it's televised at least statewide or regionally on the Packers TV network. I'm not sure that I believe NFL Network has, you know, kind of picked it up in the past. I don't know if they're doing so this year or not. But regardless, you know, kind of a big event in Green Bay. And I'll, you know, the one thing I'm looking forward to in the next day is seeing with Packers having a day off, who can return from injury, because it's, you know, I'm hoping that, you know, some of these injuries sustained early in camp, players are starting, you know, to get back and healthy by now for this event, for family, in time for family night on Saturday. And I think kind of maybe one guy who we really need to see is running back John Crockett, because if you watched head coach Mike McCarthy's press conference on Tuesday after practice, he kind of, if you read between the lines, he kind of called out John Crockett because Mike McCarthy was asked about the running backs. And you know, you kind of have to infer this, but he said, you know, what the most important thing is for you to be out there and practicing. And the only running back who's not out there and practicing has been John Crockett. And I'm not, you know, I'm not to sit here and insinuate he's not healthy, but the kid just needs to get out there. I mean, he suffered a sprained ankle in minicamp. It's been more than a month since then. Well, about a month. And, you know, maybe with this day off, it's just going to give him an extra day. Hopefully he can get off the pup list and out there and you know, start to contribute to practice before the preseason actually begins. Because after family night, you know, now then it's time for games where every week they're you know, getting ready for a preseason game. So excited to see if some guys, you know, like Ricky Collins, like Mike Neal, these guys on the pup list, not just Crockett, but some other ones can come back from injury too this week. But anyway, that'll do it for today's episode of Railbird Central. Thank you everybody so much for joining us on the show today. Thanks to Sigmund Bloom of footballguys.com for joining us, talking a little fantasy football this morning. We'll see you later, folks. My call to action, as usual, if you've not done so already, please give us a rating on iTunes. It's the best way we get word out about the show, because people go looking for podcasts on iTunes, and when they go looking for Packers podcasts, we want this one to kind of pop up and be their go-to destination. We have no subscription, no paywall. This show is absolutely free. The one small thing we ask in return, hey, just help us. Give us a rating. That's it. That's it. Just a moment of your time. So thanks a lot, folks. We'll see you again on Friday. Scott McKenna, our monthly, the first Friday of every month guest, will be joining us. So we'll talk more Packers football then. We'll see you later, folks. I leave you today with a song called Mauna Boa by the String Cheese Incident on Psy Fidelity Records. See ya. Go Pack. Go Pack.